The closing market report is made possible in part by Justin Wood, Paul Stevens, Tim Smith, Scott Harms, and Mark Soderberg of Archer Financial Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm. You can learn more about the services they offer at 800-637-3123.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for May 13, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, last month's fertilizer explosion in West Texas is now being treated as a criminal case. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason will look at the origins of corn. And the folk from Chesapeake Energy will be by with the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Here's how futures settled on this Monday afternoon in Kansas City. May wheat, 760.5 down 11. July, 766.5 up 7.75. May wheat in Chicago, 701.5 up 4.75. July, 709.75 up 5.5. May corn, 718 up 30.25. July, 655.5 up 19.25. And December at 539.25. Up 9.75. May soybeans, 15.21 up 32.75. July, 14.19.25 up 20.25. And November at 12.09.75 up 4.25. May soybean meal, 457.90 up 13.60. July, 415.10 up 8.30. May soybean oil, 49.61 up 44. July, 49.61 up 38. June live cattle, 120.52.5 up 7.5. August, 120.80 up 2.5. May feeders, 134.97.5 down 40. May lean hogs at 91.95 down a nickel. May soybean oil at 49.61 up 44. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. That's today's settlements in Chicago and in Kansas City.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says rain is likely in much of the Midwest late this week into early next week, slowing field work once again. Periodic rainfall will also continue next week, but warmer temperatures may help with drying rates between precipitation events. U.S. Midwest plains and delta temperatures will turn notably warmer this week, with highs in the 80s becoming common Tuesday and Wednesday, with upper 70s and lower to a few middle 80s possible by the remainder of the week. The bottom line for the U.S. Midwest planting season will be favorable for field work early this week and then deteriorating conditions during the weekend and early next week. Very warm to hot weather will occur in U.S. hard red winter wheat country today and Tuesday, with a more seasonably warm range of temperatures the remainder of the week.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Before we delve too deeply into things, I just have to ask, what is up with the May hard red winter wheat contract in Kansas City? One really blimp on my screen.
Well, we're seeing going into delivery process here. Volumes extremely thin last trading days here. So just about anything can happen when you've got people caught one way or the other. The commercial trade's all focused on bids off the July right at the present time. So it's just a matter of a little squeeze plays, possibly one way or the other. As far as actual physical cash direction, according to where the futures are, I don't know if that's real significant at this point in time. As they start to square away and everybody gets to where they want to be there, Dave.
And those contracts go off the board tomorrow at noon. And it was a rather perky day for the May corn and May soybean contracts.
That was the positive part, yes.
Yes.
We're seeing shorts trying to buy their way out, not a whole lot for sale. Basis remains extremely strong. Especially after last Friday's numbers, there continues to confirm that we're in a tight situation. We're not going to run out, but producers are focused on farm work and not too interested in selling at the present moment. Historically, that's been a basis improvement time window when that does happen, and so that's we're adding a little fuel to the fire here. I expect the May corn and bean contracts are going to continue to carry the premium into their expiration tomorrow there, then the bull, or ones who still have cash grain, will say, well, it's the function of the July to go up and pick up where the front end left off.
Well, that would be an impressive rally, because in corn, we're looking at more than 60 cents, and we're looking at well over a dollar in the soybeans.
Correct. That is the current spread there, and then the idea is that the bull spread should work in here as the July takes over leadership here versus the deferred contracts.
How much can this enthusiasm in the July contracts going forward help either November soybeans or December corn?
Well, I think that was the whole function of the market. I can't say whole, a good chunk of the function of the market today. A lot of people want to talk weather, but I think it's just enthusiasm of the old crop supported or spilled over into the new crop and gave it support. If the old crop wouldn't have had the solid legs on it, I'm not quite for sure if new crop would not have been lower today. So it's going to be sort of a cat and mouse game here on old crop as end users or ones that need to buy. So it tries to secure those supplies. Or those who have a long position, if they hang on to keep the market firming through here. But, if we can keep the enthusiasm alive in the old crop and continue to see a little weather concern, this new crop has potential. But step one would be to get over today's highs. The highs we made today is some resistance levels to keep an eye on. If we can take that out, we can push a little higher yet. So popular belief now is we'll have a contrary Tuesday if we don't see anything bullish happen here between now and tonight's trade.
And the trade is expecting what when they see the crop progress report in about 45 minutes?
Well, that's a good question. A wide range. We've seen ideas as corn plant progress anywhere from 15% to 38% complete. There's some areas that are done. There's areas that haven't started. To get an accurate number, I guess, going to be virtually impossible because of wide variance. If you've been driving around the countryside, you'll see one corn planted or one field that has corn supposedly planted in, and right next to it you'll see a field with standing water in and nothing done. So it varies highly. Most of the trades dialed into a little narrow range of that, anywhere from 26 to 28% completed as a nation. And there's ideas that there's anywhere from 6 to 9% of the beans in the ground, Dave.
So that's 26, 29 as a nation, but we all know where the bulk of the corn is, Illinois, Iowa, Indiana. When we looked last week, those numbers were way less than the national average.
Well, we're behind the national average. Depends what type of average you're using, of course, but the five-year average is about 66%
right.
complete, so we're going to be behind. The average and where you're at probably needs to be more focused on Dakotas, Minnesota, and the Northern Belt. That's where it's going to remain cool and wet. They're really going to struggle, and I think that's where, you know, it's going to be a real challenge to get some work done there. But you got to remember, a year ago, we got in early.
Yes.
But we only had a yield of 123 bushels to the acre, so maybe this late planting might be better after all.
So at what point might we logically begin to talk about switching of acres to soybeans?
Well, that varies from region to region, but ideas are once we get past this weekend through here, the areas that's going to probably get wet again that does not have an opportunity to get some field work done, we'll start to see them become a little bit more serious about that. Here in the central part, for the most part, guys will, you know, try to stick with it until we get to the end of May, 1st of June. For it to be a market factor, you know, we are presently seeing the trade assume maybe 1 to 2 million acres switch. To be a market maker, I think you need to be in that 3 to 4 million acre area, and that would be more to the northern areas if they receive the rain and don't warm up as quite as well as we do here.
And you make that point because of the demand situation and where we're sitting right now.
Yeah, that's the big thing. There's a lot of moving targets. You know, you make that bottom line, just go about anywhere you want. But the trade, the reports that's come out on new crops, it's got a hefty demand base, and we've got our work cut out here to achieve that or keep that market share demand here for us here in the U.S.
A word or two about livestock, please.
Per capita consumption continues to be weak.
Did you grill last weekend?
I did my job in helping support the trend of a higher consumption rate. It was pretty doggone good.
Okay.
And overall, cold storage supplies are hefty here. We've just had a terrible winter and a terrible spring so far to really get consumption going. Overall numbers haven't changed. And we believe there's a play in the June and August fats to make a move to the upside here due to the fact that the cash market's going to remain firm here as we go into the spring. Now, and once you get on to next fall, we'll have to see how overall demand unfolds here. But you know, not only here in the U.S., but our export market has started to slow there for a while, too. So once we get through some supply issues here and get this demand kicked back up, we look for recovery in the fat market here as we go into this June and July time window.
Thank you, Kurt.
Take care, thanks.
That's Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
In agricultural news, Texas law enforcement officials have launched a criminal investigation into the massive fertilizer plant explosion that killed at least 14 people last month after weeks of largely treating the blast as an industrial accident. The announcement came the same day that federal agents said they found bomb-making materials belonging to a paramedic who helped to evacuate residents the night of the explosion. Bryce Reed was arrested early Friday morning last week on a charge of possessing a destructive device, but law enforcement officials are saying they have not linked the charge to the April 17th fire and blast at West Fertilizer Company. worldwide levels of the chief greenhouse gas that causes global warming have hit a milestone, reaching an amount never before encountered by humans. Carbon dioxide was measured at 400 parts per million at the oldest monitoring station in Hawaii. The last time the worldwide carbon level was probably that high was at least 2 million years ago, and perhaps as long as 10 million years ago. Levels are now growing about 2 parts per million per year. That's 100 times faster than at the end of the Ice Age. The speed of the change is the big worry. If carbon dioxide levels go up 100 parts per million over thousands or millions of years, plants and animals can adapt. But that cannot happen at the speed it is now happening. USDA will conduct environmental assessments of new corn, soybean, and cotton seeds genetically engineered to withstand herbicides, further delaying the possible launch of products from Monsanto Company and Dow Chemical Company. USDA announced Friday that it would prepare environmental impact statements for the products, saying they were required before final approval because the products may significantly affect the quality of the human environment. The new crops are part of an industry response to the development of weeds that have developed resistance to glyphosate. A group of ethanol industry and agriculture groups are joining forces to fund a nationwide survey of livestock producers on the use of ethanol co-products, such as distillers' grains. The survey is aimed at beef, dairy, swine, and poultry producers and will highlight what types of co-products are being fed, at what levels inclusion rates are being used, and what feedstuffs the co-products are being substituted for. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Corn, as we know it today, is a relatively young crop in comparison to the age of the world. Todd Gleason spoke with corn breeder Forrest Troyer as the two explore where corn was domesticated and how it came to the United States.
Corn was first domesticated in Mexico between 4,500 and 7,000 years ago along the 18th parallel. It was flint corn. Somewhere around 1,000 BC, retired corn breeder Forrest Troyer says this early corn was moved into the area we now know as New Mexico and Arizona.
And then the dent corn came in after Columbus, probably Cortez, when he went to Tampa Bay, when he went to Tampa Bay, probably brought the first dent corn to the United States.
The critical thing about these two moves was that the corn, flint, and dent had to be adapted to longer days and cooler, shorter seasons. Now, dent has also been developed in Mexico, but much later than flint, probably about 1500 BC, says Troyer. So flint corn came into the southwestern part of the United States, and dent corn traveled much later into the eastern U.S. Dent corn was superior to flint in almost every respect. The kernels were larger and the yields were greater. Soon enough, European settlers in the New World recognized the two different kinds of corn were related and could be crossed.
And the flints were the source of earlier maturity that was needed, and the dents were the source of higher yield and also better feeding traits. So some number of people in Virginia and in Tennessee and Kentucky crossed flint by dents to develop varieties.
Generally, says Troyer, it is estimated that by the time most of the United States had been settled, in the 1840s, about 250 different varieties of dent/flint crosses had been developed. The Corn Belt at that time still hadn't made its way northward. The prime growing states were Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee.
And the reason for that is that the land grants from the Revolutionary War from Virginia, the state of Virginia, and also the land grants that were issued to veterans of the Mexican War were virtually all in that area. There was a small area in southern Ohio on the Scioto River, but there were two areas in Tennessee and there's two areas in Kentucky. And, of course, the corn in Virginia was already there. I mean, you know that they had already worked with it before the movement west started.
It is the combination of what American Indians did in bringing Flint corn north into the U.S. and what European settlers did with Dent corn on the East Coast that has resulted in the hybrids grown today by farmers in the new Corn Belt, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. As farmers settled those states, they brought the 250 Dent-Flint crosses northwestward with them. Those open-pollinated crosses, the Dent-Flint combinations, were quickly adapted to the growing conditions of the Midwest. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
So I suppose the question that a lot of people have is to what degree will basis continue to be relatively firm as futures continue to, you know, they're kind of on the defensive for the most part, today notwithstanding.
You're right. I mean, the futures market is kind of an indication of the worldwide market, and worldwide there is sufficient corn out there at the right price. But here in the United States and in certain locations, specifically central Illinois, there isn't that much corn available, and so you're seeing basis levels extremely strong, and I think they'll continue to stay extremely strong. The basis is a local issue, and basis levels around here are going to have to stay extremely firm for another 2 months until we, you know, get closer to that new crop harvest.
So you're saying all the way into the mid to end of July?
Yeah, you know, and you hate to have to wait till the very end, but it, you know, it's kind of a game of poker. You know, you got fewer and fewer people playing as we get further and farther into the summer, and you're going to have some people that need to buy a few trains, and you're going to have a few people that are still holding on. But it's a real high risk game waiting till the very end. But somebody's going to come out, you know, either on the good side or on the bad side. But you know, you'll see some volatility as you get down to fewer and fewer traders in July.
Did you find or discover any more additional old crop corn or soybeans on this little pop today?
No. Until farmers get in the field and get planting, I don't think that they're very willing to want to sell any more new crop corn, and and there's very little old crop corn left to sell.
Well, that's what I was wondering, if there was any more old crop out there to be had.
Yeah, there's some. I don't want to say there's none, but it's extremely limited, and like you say, the futures price, up notwithstanding today, has been relatively sideways to lower, so this certainly isn't bringing out any new selling at these levels.
So what kind of prices do you think that producers, I know they're in the field for the next 3 or 4 days, would be willing to do some business at?
I think it's, you know, $7 old crop corn is not a bad price, which is, you know, where we're at today. We hit that today. But $7 if they get the crop planted. Mm-hmm. You know, if they don't get it planted, $7 probably isn't enough.
What are your prices today?
Cash corn is $6.99, new crop corn $5.22, old crop beans over the $15 mark again at $15.04, new beans $11.89, and the wheat is $6.90.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. I'll be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather with the folk from Chesapeake Energy out of Chicago, Illinois. It's National Apple Pie Day. Apples are thought to originate in Asia, where its wild ancestor is still found today. Apples were brought to North America with the colonists in the 1600s, and the first apple orchard in the New World was said to be near Boston in 1625. On this day in agricultural history in 1878, Joseph Henry died. One of the first great American scientists, Henry was the first director of the Smithsonian Institution, where he established the foundation of a national weather service. In 1884, Cyrus Hall McCormick died. He is generally credited with the development of the mechanical reaper. His father had worked unsuccessfully between 1809 and 1816 to develop a reaping machine. He followed his father's lead and by 1831 was able to publicly demonstrate a functional machine able to cut a 4-foot swath. In 1834, he patented his design. To defend his patent against a competitor, in 1843, a widely publicized competition was held between their rival products, in which McCormick's machine was judged the better. He sold 29 harvesters that year, 50 the next, and by 1848, he was in business with a factory in Chicago, Illinois, able to produce 500 machines. With production line assembly within a few years, McCormick dominated the market. And in 1958, Velcro was trademarked. The hook loop fastener was invented in 1945. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is John Davis of Chesapeake Energy, and he is in Chicago. What I want to call you is the guy who's going to tell us about these 3 or 4 open planting days that we have right now, and then ask you how widespread the area that the planting might be in.
Well, we are going to have a couple of open days here coming up, and if you look at the state of Illinois, part of the state is going to have much more than 3 or 4 open days here coming up. The southern portion of the state, kind of the area south of Champaign and south of kind of normal Bloomington, that area will begin to get into rain as early as Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday night, and Thursday. However, the northern portion of the state will remain dry through Friday into Saturday, and not until Sunday and Monday we get some rains across that area. So it's kind of two different timelines as to how long the open weather persists in the northern portion of the state and the southern portion of the state.
And what happens as we go west and north into Minnesota?
They're in the dry mode, too, and they will have more of an extended period of dry conditions here coming up, as they will not tend to get into the more significant rains until late in the upcoming weekend, Sunday on into Monday, and they will be slowed down at that time.
I wonder about their temperatures, though, because 40s and 50s doesn't make for quick dry down.
Yeah, well, they're going to be very warm. Everyone is going to be very warm through the remainder of this week. And so everyone's up in the 70s and 80s, even a few lower 90s here and there. And that will be the story into the weekend. Then we get kind of a sharp cool down occurring the early portion of next week that's associated with that storm system moving through. And then after that, it looks like kind of another warm up.
So are we beginning to approach something more seasonal? Are we breaking this cold pattern now? What are you looking at?
Oh, no question, is that the consistency of the cold pattern, which goes back 3 months or so, there's no question that that pattern is fundamentally different from this point on that has been the case. You are going to see quite a bit of volatility, and so we're going to have very warm temperatures the next 4 or 5 days, a sharp cool down early next week, and then warmer temperatures beyond that. So a lot of volatility in temperatures, but the consistent cold, which was the benchmark of this spring, that is over.
A word or two about things that concern you.
I think worldwide here, an area to start watching is Ukraine over in Russia. They've been extremely dry here so far this spring, and with prospects relatively poor across that region, that is kind of an area that's always key to watch as to when dryness begins to evolve there, does it begin to expand to other areas? So that's an area to watch.
Thank you, John.
My pleasure, Dave.
That's John Davis of Chesapeake Energy, and he is in Chicago, Illinois, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter. You can do that at willag.org. Use the link in the right navigation window, and it's simple to sign. This is Dave Dickey.